that you're born an Italian. If you want your life to be great, see that you're born an Italiano and your life will be great.
Hey there, Paisani. Welcome back to another episode of the Italian American Podcast. I'm John Viola, coming to you with two of my best pals in the world, the notorious POB, the Italian American Wikipedia himself, Mr. Patrick O'Boyle, and the Bensonhurst Barbie. Is that, can we use that now, Ro? Is that allowed?
That's a little offensive, I think.
No, I think now. It's nice, right?
With it, wasn't offended. Who was offended?
The Belle of Bensonhurst herself, Rosella Rago?
The Belle of Bensonhurst, I think, has a little nicer. In a politically correct world, I think that we could get away with that a little bit more.
Ro, whatever.
In my opinion, at least.
Anytime somebody wants to call me a Barbie, I'm fine with it. I'm 35. 35-year-old Barbie sounds pretty.
Yeah, it sure does, yeah. Well, you are, of course, one of a kind, and for us, you are the rose between two thorns on this episode, and we're going to add another thorn.
Just two thorns?
Well, we're going to add a third.
I think there's a heck of a lot. It's like a crown of thorns.
It's like being with us like a crown of thorns, that's for sure. We're going to add in a third thorn to this conversation, and one that I think everybody in our audience is going to be really excited to hear from, because this gentleman comes to us all the way from what I would like to call Italian Australia, just like I like to refer to Italian America here, our little overlay of this great country of ours. And having spent some time in Italian Australia when I was at the National Italian American Foundation, I was absolutely blown away by how amazingly dedicated to the history and culture and welcoming the Italian Australian community was, or Italo-Australian community was. And this gentleman has not only made his mark within his own tribe over there, but really has become a global phenomenon, and all audiences love him. But I think in particular, those of us in the tribe have a special affinity for the man who has been referred to as the Italian Seinfeld, which is awesome on so many levels. So we're really happy to welcome Joe Avati to the Italian American Podcast. So Joe, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much, guys and girls. And I'm very excited to be here. It's always exciting to learn more and more about Italian Americans, because I think they're probably the most complex of the Italians outside of Italy. I mean, when you're talking about Italo-Australians, Italo-Canadians, they're very similar, very much on par in very, very many different ways. The Italians in the UK are like the Italians in Australia and Canada, but probably a little bit more Italian because they're only an hour, 2 hours from Italy. But the Italian-Americans are a real different kind of, there's layers in it. So I'm really excited to learn a little bit more, hopefully, today.
Oh, thank you.
That's such a beautiful opening. You know, I often thought when you first came on the American scene in the early 2000s,
Yeah. You
came on at the same time as Pasquale Parmigiano's stuff was coming out in Canada.
Yeah.
And I thought the link that you had, besides the fact that you're both coming from countries who are daughters of the empire, right?
Yeah.
You're all Calabrese people. There's a Calabrese connection.
Yeah.
You know, like you made a comment one time and you're like, you come to America and a lot of people don't understand the dialect.
Yeah.
But what's even more fascinating is, they were Calabrese words. I would understand when you start, when your comedy routines came out here, because, you know, we all dawned with the dawn of the internet because we're in the same age bracket.
Yeah.
Huoco mio. Who knew what that word meant? If you were not Calabrese, Manaya. And my friends, I grew up with kids who were born in Catanzaro and came here like 7, 8 years old, and their grandfather spoke no English at all.
Yeah.
And I had to understand the Catanzaro language.
Yeah.
Like Imana or Huoco. And you came on. And I was like, wow, there's so much, because you have, like, you bring about how close you are with Canada, but I think Calabria has a lot to do with that. You are the glue that holds Canada and Australia together, the Italian communities.
So I just think it's so interesting that it took an Italo-Australian comedian to be the springboard for the Italian-American comedians who are big, like Sebastian Maniscalco, Frank Spadone, who is a Barese Canadian.
Frank used to open up for me in Canada about 21 years ago.
I love Frank. Yeah. But all of these things have come from you. And like, I know how it feels when, you know, people call me like the OG Nonna creator. How does it feel to know that you're the roots of all these people really turning their heritage into comedy gold? I think it's incredible.
Well, you know, it's an honor, to be honest. And I'm really proud of it. It's one of the things I'm probably proud of the most, is that I know that my comedy back in, it kind of started in 2000 and has spawned all these comedians ever since. And you know, and then people like Sebastian Maniscalco have gone on to do huge things, that, and so much so that sometimes I get abused, not too much, but I get abused by some people who are big fans of Sebastian, who turn to me and say, "Oh, you're just a, you're a Sebastian Maniscalco ripoff." Right? Like, bro, I've been doing it a lot longer, but I mean, I love, and Sebastian is fantastic.
To do this, that's not true. You gave them the balls to go out there and make jokes about the Busta and the speeches and the dialects. And I'm sorry, my regional language.
I think that people, when they see through it, they know, you know, the people who are real true Italian comedy fans know, you know, where it all came from. And I'm not a Sebastian ripoff, and Sebastian's not a ripoff of me. But it's great. It's fantastic because it's kept it alive. And what I'm happy more about is that there are different types of you know, everyone's, some are doing characters, some are doing voices, some are doing videos, and it's great, and it's fantastic. It's nice to know that, and it, you know what's really nice more than anything else is that people recognize that and they actually say it, and that means a lot to me. You know, sometimes there've been a couple who've gone and done it, but they kind of act like they were the first ones to do it, and I'm like, guys, you know, really, you don't need to be. Let's all work together. You
won't, that's an Italian concept. I don't know where you've been. Rowing together is not on our to-do list. Back in the Renaissance, it didn't happen. Michelangelo hated Raphael. They did not get along. They had spies. We're good at a lot of stuff. Working together is not on that to-do list.
Yeah, well, it is on mine. Wouldn't it be great if we did an Italian comedy festival? Absolutely. And like we did like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or a week. And we tour. We go to Toronto. We do it in America. So a couple of places in America, in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and Australia. And we get everybody, because there's 15, 20 of us now who do it, you know, and we all do our bit. Well, I think that would be great. That's the way I think, guys, anyway.
We feel the same way, but sometimes we feel we row alone, because Italians are a competitive Southern Italians, our tribe. Yeah. Yeah. You know, everything's south of Rome. We're a competitive. That's why we invented the Maloy kids. Our own, you know, the way we average things out.
You know, it's so funny, though. The one thing that I always cling to in all of these men and women who have, with your lead and really groundbreaking, embrace this idea that even in 2022, we can speak about our ethnic experience across this gigantic diaspora, and thankfully, yeah, so much of it is Anglophone, and we can understand each other.
Yes.
But I find it really interesting because, you know, I think a lot of the complexity that you reference in our community comes from how long we've been here, right? That
That's exactly got, right, yes.
Yes, so many generations and removed and not, you know, the post-war experience being so different than the pre-war experience. But I find it really amazing that I can watch you and you talk about your life experiences and observations of growing up the son of Italian immigrants.
Yeah.
And I am the grandson of Italian immigrants. But everything relates, and I think that's the beauty of this entire movement is, you know, we all of different generations, different geographies, different backgrounds, we can relate, and it gives me a lot of hope that even as we integrate and assimilate into these other countries outside of Italy, we are really maintaining so much of who we are that we can understand and find the humor in it and reflect on ourselves.
Well, what's interesting is that we've actually become our own version. Yeah. People like us don't exist in Italy.
Yeah.
They only exist in countries like England, America, Canada, Australia, and in New Zealand. There's a lot of Italians, believe it or not. Not too many, but there's enough for me to do shows in New Zealand, in South Africa, Ireland, Scotland, Belgium. So I'm going to all these countries in this year and next year. And we're very unique, because in about 30 years' time, we will be extinct.
Yeah, correct.
So we've come along in the last 100 years, and in the next 50 years, we'll be gone. So people like us will only have existed for 150 years. You know?
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's a big reason why the three of us and Dolores and Anthony have been so committed to this show, because it's almost like leaving a time capsule, right? If we can diagnose this stuff now, and we always say sometimes this show is part entertainment, part history, but it's also part like community therapy, right? Because we're asking these questions about why we are the way we are, and digging into the anthropology of it. And I think we leave, for those holdovers that'll be out there in the next couple of generations, we leave them sort of breadcrumbs to self-discovery, because it's easier to understand in our experience and while we're here. And I find the diaspora so fascinating. You are working everywhere What are you noticing in some of these places? Where are the unique examples? You know, you talked a little bit about England and Australia and Canada. Like, what's the South African community like?
Well, I haven't played there yet, but I know that they are because I'm getting a lot of feedback from there. So the plan is to do Johannesburg and Cape Town next year, and Auckland and Wellington also early next year. So I don't know theirs, but I can tell you, so the Italians in the UK, because they travel, because it's only an hour, 2 hours, they will go to Italy 3 or 4 times a year sometimes. So their Italian is a lot better. Mm-hmm. And their sort of traditions, they tend to hold on to them a lot more. The uniqueness about, say, the Canadian Italians, their language is a little bit different, but they will do things like the Toronto Italians and the Montreal Italians. They have these massive stag nights for someone who gets married, which we don't have in Australia. I haven't really seen it in America. From what I could see in America, the weddings, the Italian weddings are just a big show.
Yeah, big show. Spaconderfest. Yeah. That, you know what our first episode was? How much do you put in the envelope? How much you put in our booster? How do you calculate the booster? That was the first.
It's actually a complex mathematical equation.
Yeah.
You have to remember how much money they gave you. The book.
You got to adjust for inflation. You got to adjust how many kids they had. How many?
But you know what? There's always a fight. You know, like someone goes, because even the seating arrangement, and a seating arrangement at an Italian wedding can take 3 months. Because this cousin doesn't sit next to this cugino doesn't speak to that auntie. And then one of the funny ones I thought was somebody came, this guy here, he come here, he bring 4 people, only put $200 in the table. Next time, he's to cover you in Gabonetto.
That's so true.
Yeah, because we all have, I don't want to mention the family party that happened but I remember that conversation coming out of my grandmother.
Yeah.
My grandmother ran a tally about how many people they bought, and they had the most money of anybody there.
Yeah.
But see, that's what unites us.
Yes.
We get this.
Yes.
Your non-Italian neighbor next door in Australia doesn't get this.
No.
But we're on the other side of the world. The George Foreman grill is what changed it all. When you talked about, because the George Foreman grill exploded all around the world. And when you talked about your grandfather souping up all the fat and stuff on the bottom, I said, we're one people. Yeah. Because everybody gets that. The phenomena hit the world and we all reacted the same way.
My nonna loved that George Foreman grill like it was one of her children, I gotta say. She used it every day.
Isn't it funny? It was all over the world.
You know what? I think it's so important because we're kind of like this one-off generation. And even though, you know, Joe, maybe you're a little bit older than us, my parents immigrated in the very late 70s, early 80s. It's like once our children grow up, they're never going to be like us. They're never going to, children, Italian immigrants today, they're never going to see the world the way we, you know, when you're a child of immigrants, you're forced to see the world differently. I grew up reading mail from my parents, from my grandmother, you know, having all these funny interactions that they're never going to have, you know, because they have the internet and they have.
Yeah, but there's a better big difference. We are the people of an agrarian Southern Italian culture. That's why everybody's jarring tomatoes. We're farm people and a way of life that's disappeared in Italy. And I think that roots us to the medieval times, the Romans.
Yeah.
You know, we're the farmers of Magna Grecia. I think that's such an aspect of who we are.
Yes.
Well, we have the values from the 1970s. You know, we're not Italy today. We're Italy years ago.
That's right. So I was born 1974, and all of my dad's family came over in 1973. So I grew up in the arms of my nonni, of my uncles and aunties who didn't speak any English. So I actually learned to speak Calabrese before I learned. So they arrived in October 1973. I was born August 1974. So 9-10 months later, I grew up in the arms of all these people who didn't speak any English. I spoke Calabrese before I learned to speak English. When I went to school is when I learned English. And so really, as you said, Rosella, I am the product of Calabria 1973 because I was instilled in my all the morals and the principles and how to do things. I learned because my dad had 2 brothers, 4 sisters. Then there's the nonni, 10 members of the family who all came on the one ship at the same time. And then I was in their arms for years. That's what I know. Reggio Calabria, 1973.
And isn't it incredible that I'm born in 1987, but I have the exact same experience as you.
Exactly.
I was 5 until They made me go to Montessori school. And my brother started telling me how to give the teachers the finger. And that's how you say hello. And, and you know, we're continents apart, years apart, yet we share this experience.
Well, here's an example that I always use when I do these kind of interviews, because I'm always being asked this. What's interesting is that you could get four people from the same village, whatever village in Calabria, Sicily, Salerno, wherever, it doesn't matter. Four people from the same village. One goes to England, one goes to America, one goes to Canada, one goes to Australia. They don't have any contact with each other at all for 40 years. Fast forward, they get onto Facebook, for example. Facebook, they unite. You know, everyone from the same village, let's have a look at your life now, 40 years down the track, even though we never had anything to do with each other. They all do the same thing. They all put the plastic on the furniture. Yes, they all water the concrete.
Correct.
And in the 80s, everyone had a bad back and went on compensation. How do you explain that everyone left that little village and ended up doing the same? And it's not like they said, oh, compadre, I bought this couch, but I put plastic on it. Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I should do that here in Australia. They just did it.
Yeah.
They all did it instinctually. I love that. I just love that.
Because you can't breed thousands of years out of people. I mean, we were all in the same place. I mean, Julius Caesar was in grammar school. Our ancestors were under the same rock. I mean, that's why I always think that, especially with the work that you did, that we're a civilization. We are the Southern Italian Magna Graecia civilization confronts the Anglophonic world, and we're the product, be that product in Australia or in Canada, the States, Scotland, wherever. And I think that's the amalgamization.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the Anglophonic world also exposes a lot of our insanity.
That's true.
You know, they say stuff and we're like, why do we do that? You know, it's a mirror of reflection.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that the one thing that you did that revolutionized everything was because your rise, your start of your career coincided with the explosion of the internet, because we're the same age, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Before that, like, there were Italian American comedians, Lou Bacala, Pat Cooper, who were the you of the 1940s, because my grandparents' generation was born in 1920. They were the you of that generation.
Yes.
And they were the Italian-American kids who grew up, they had the exact same experience as you, but in the years of the 20s. And you had a whole set of comedians then, because I remember them. Like, I don't know how much you know about American comedic history, but the Barsh Belt, the Catskills, had their own Italian comedians.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting. Yeah. This is why I'm interested to know more, because this is why I wanted to learn more today. It's great.
I was up there. I saw the very last of that. So there was Villa Roma, Pine Springs, Villa Vizzilla. They were all Italian resorts in the Catskills. And the thrill for the Italians were the women didn't have to cook for a week.
Yeah, right.
So you had American breakfast, Italian lunch,
yeah,
and an American dinner. It was just a food fest with coffee and watermelon in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And the Italian comedians would come on at night, usually had one a week, and they would go from resort to resort.
Yeah.
And they would do the exact kind of comedy you did. It'd be half in English with Italian punchlines, right?
Yeah.
And these old ladies, these women born 1918, 1908, they'd be keeling over laughing. Like, I was thinking of this morning when I was thinking about coming on the show.
Yeah.
There was a punchline they used constantly. Basta ca non fum. I don't know what that, basta ca non fum. And they'd be like dying and they'd be laughing. Yeah. And there were so many of those jokes
smoke,
I can remember. Basta ca non fum. And I don't know why they would use it, but there was some reason they would just lose it, right? Yeah. And it was a therapy. I say it was therapeutic in the sense that it was allowing them, because they had even more baggage, that generation, because they were on the wrong side of the war.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, my grandmother had cousins fighting for Italy, fighting for the United States, you know, family shooting at each other during the war. And I think it was so hard in America, because I know you talk about, you make a great point about how you can be Italian and Australian and Italian first, and it's not treasonous. And America has such an identity. You know, there's identity issues. Are you an American? Are you real American? What's a hyphenated American?
Yeah.
And I think for that crowd, the World War II crowd, it was so hard because you had the war added to that. So the comedians gave them an off-ramp, because there's another guy, Joe, I don't know if you listened to, Lou Monti.
Lou Monti. He was a singer too, right?
He wrote comedic songs.
Yes.
Dominic the Donkey, but he actually was born within walking distance of my house. And my grandparents' generation, they were crazy for this guy because he gave them, like you, with these musical comedies, he got them because the American world didn't get them, the Italian world didn't get them, but this hybrid world got them, and he was a voice for that.
Yeah. And So, but Pat Cooper, is that his stage name or is he goes by another name?
Pasquale Caputo is the real name.
Pat Cooper's his stage name, but Pasquale Caputo is his right. Yeah, because I've heard he wears big glasses, right?
Yeah,
he's got big glasses.
Yeah,
he's from Mola di Bari. He's from the same village as me. And classic Mola di Bari fashion. He does not speak to any of his children, any of his family. He doesn't speak to his own mother. I mean, you got to hear his Howard Stern interviews where they call up his mother, they call up his daughter. They're all cursing at each other. She's like, he's like, all you want is money. Take the money. Go buy poison with it. It's really, it's a love fest.
Wow.
Yeah, he was really a pioneer here in the United States. I mean, that's a guy who, you know, he was mainstream to the point of being on Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
But with humor that really was aimed at his own tribe. And yeah, he's a real treasure.
Yeah.
You know, something I note about you, and it's interesting because I never thought of it as a fan until we were doing the episode and I'm now reading about you. You're noted all over for being a clean comic. You're not doing, you know, controversial topics, not using filthy language.
Yeah.
And when we came on the show, I don't know where, it just sort of happened. The first time somebody cursed on our show and I needed the clip, I just bleeped it out. Yeah. And if ever one of us slips, we bleep it out or we cut out the segment, whatever. And a lot of people have written us and said, particularly Italian-Americans who've been here for many generations, they listen to the show as a family with the nonni and the kids, and it's a vessel for them to rediscover. Did you make that a conscious decision based on you, or do you think that's something that you've noticed throughout the Italian comedy world, Italian diaspora comedy world?
Yeah, so it was, firstly, it was born from the idea that if my dad was in the audience and he heard me swearing, I would have copped Nils Bentaloni straight up, right? He would have just come up. He would have come up on stage. He would have done a Will Smith on me back then, right? So that was one thing. But consciously, I mean, I was embarrassed. I didn't grow up like that. I didn't grow up swearing in front of people. And so I brought that on stage. But also from a business decision, because I have children that come to my show. I've got their parents and the nonni that come to my show. And see, now I do the show all in English. So it's not just, I get Greeks and Indians and Chinese and Maltese, and Arabs. They all love what I do because it's the same for their culture. But back then it was just the Italian market. So to make sure that I got the most out of that Italian market, I thought if I swore, then no one's going to bring their wife, no one's going to bring their nonni, no one's going to bring their kids. So if I don't swear, it's going to widen the market. So it was a business decision as well as a personal decision. And you know what's interesting is that people really appreciate it, but when they come and tell you that they're thankful that you didn't swear, they actually whisper it like it's something wrong. They go, thank you for not swearing.
Well, isn't that sad?
Isn't that funny? That they it's like it's a bad thing. You know, but it's a good thing. It's a bad thing. But yeah, no, I don't swear. I don't need to swear. I mean, I'm doing 2 hours straight on stage. It just flows. And actually, in Vancouver, I did 2 hours and 20 minutes straight, not one swear word. And
God bless.
I really enjoyed it. I enjoy it. I'm enjoying it more now than I ever have. Interestingly enough,
why is that?
Because I know this is going to sound really weird to you guys. I never thought of myself as a comedian. I was just a guy who was just telling stories. And I winged it for 20-something years. I thought, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm doing it well. I understand all the stand-up and everything. But this time I had to actually write a brand new show for my tour. And what I did was, and I've never done this before, normally I'll do a one joke in, one joke out, keep a couple of classics and then... You know, I do a lot of old stuff and a bit of new stuff. And by the time I got to Canada, it was enough new stuff, but still old stuff. This time I went blank page. I'm starting again. So I actually learned how to be a writer and a comedian. So for the first time ever, I'm actually think that I'm a comedian in my head. I never watched comedy at all because I didn't want to be influenced by anybody. But I actually studied comedy in this last year and a half during COVID. And I actually started to write a show, and I've never done that ever in my life. And it was a lot easier than I thought. And I actually break down my show and I move bits and pieces around. And I create a point where I get people in a frenzy, and then I stop, and then I get everybody to stand up, and then I give them a break for 5 minutes from comedy, and then we start again, and then I use different techniques. Hopefully you guys will get a chance to come and see the show next week.
Absolutely, and
you'll see what I'm talking about.
I think that speaks to what an art form comedy is. I mean, I think a lot of people really take it for granted. Oh, he's just a funny person. Oh, he just tells a story. Oh, no. I mean, you have to write these shows out. You have to write the time. You know, comedic timing is not an accident.
No, it takes. I mean, I've been doing this 25 years, and only now I'm comfortable with the fact of being a comedian, if that could make sense. And I really enjoyed it. I've never done this before. I really, really enjoyed it. And I also talk about cancel culture, wokeism, stereotypes, and because comedians, you can joke about anything, but not to anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And this whole cancel culture, and I've noticed it in the last 5 years. There are jokes that I used to do 5 years ago, and if I do them now, all of a sudden, same audience, same people that come to the show, but all of a sudden they're like, "Ooh, I don't know if I should laugh at that." And what's happened? That's because the world out there is being censored, right? So it's the same people who used to laugh at that same joke now are not laughing at the same joke.
I wonder, that's got to be very hard to try to write something today.
Yeah.
Because you got so many shoulders looking over you.
Yeah. Well, when you come to the show, I've got this bit in the show where I actually prove that wokeism is all bullshit and that we are all racist and we are all sexist and we are all ageist. And there's a way to do it, because when you come to a comedy show, it's like being hooked up to a polygraph machine, a lie detector test. When you laugh, that's you saying, "Hey, I actually subconsciously agree with what you've just said." Yeah. So you cannot. So even if you don't want to laugh, I will make you laugh, and I will prove that you're all racists, ageist, and sexist. That's my favorite part of the show. And that I wrote, and I'm very proud of that bit. So hopefully you guys get the chance to see it.
Yeah, we hope so. We're all planning on it.
Yeah.
It's funny. You know, I was telling my wife yesterday, my wife's Italian, and you know, we come from similar backgrounds, and we were walking in town, and some movie came up. And we were laughing about recalling this movie, and I said, you know, I had in my news feed, I got a BuzzFeed article that said something like, you know, 15 movies from the 90s and 2000s that are unacceptable now. And these were, you know, like movies that everybody loved, that were universally quoted. And I thought to myself, now we're not even like waiting for these things to arrive and then cancel them. We're actually proactively going to cancel stuff that most people agreed they liked until you told them not to like it. It's really absurdist.
And the Italians, we see things differently. We have a different, if you go back like the historically, like Pat Cooper and Lou Carey Bacala.
Yeah.
Well, they were doing shows in New York in the 60s and 70s. Everything going on with the civil rights movement came into their routines.
Yeah.
And it was an Italian perspective on it.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back, it's really fascinating to see how Italian comedians were always kind of reflecting the tensions of the day.
Yeah.
Not to sound too academic on that kind of conversation, but I think it was very much present.
Absolutely. And what you notice about Italians, the Greeks are the same. We get made fun of all the time.
Yeah.
So what? Just get on with it. They're just words.
Yeah.
You know, and even when you make fun within different, you know, I do these jokes about Indian, you know, but Indians love taking the piss out of themselves. They've got a great sense of humor. They're very self-deprecating themselves. Now, they're just words. What's really important is the intention. If you get up there and you really talk down about a culture, that's not good. Okay. And that's what I think should be stamped out. But if I make a joke about an Indian guy or a black guy or a Greek guy or an Italian guy, that's just words. I love these people. If I make fun of them and hate them, that's no good. And I think that's the distinction. And a lot of people just don't realize that. A lot of people just think, oh, because you're doing a joke about a gay person that you hate gay people. I've lost count of how many gay friends I've got. Heaps of gay friends. They come to my show. They love it. They get it. They get that I'm making fun of the stereotypes about it, not having a go at them. I'm not saying gay people are bad. No, I'm saying I love gay people. And isn't it funny when they do this?
You have to walk on eggshells. You're in a world today where, and I think even with the podcast, I'll be honest with you, we had one episode one time that we thought was innocuous. And it was, we just got this firestorm out of hell that came out. And we were like, where is this coming from? Because one thing about Italians is I at least felt as a culture where we were people that could have conversations.
Yes.
And now even the capacity, now we've moved into a world where conversations are on certain subjects aren't even tolerated anymore.
Look, you know, it's the job of the comedian to walk that line. And I'm happy to walk that line and happy to take the sword. And, you know, and I'm actually enjoying it. And I actually challenge wokeism. I challenge political correctness. I challenge the cancel culture in this show. And you'll see it.
New episodes of Old Favorites are on Mediaset Italia this May. A new season of Freedom will take you on brand new adventures, amazing you with the mysteries of history and nature, airing Wednesday nights. Test your smarts with the primetime edition of popular quiz show Avanti Un Altro every Thursday night with host Paolo Bonolis. And don't forget to catch the end of this round of Amici on May 15th and the Best of Edition on May 22nd. Plus new episodes of Uomini e Donne, Forum, Cotto e Mangiato, Verissimo, and more. Mediaset Italia brings you the best television entertainment from Italian channels Canale 5, Italia 1, and Rete 4. So you'll never miss a moment from Italy. Call your local television provider and ask about Mediaset Italia today.
Yeah, it is true. I have to say, it feels like if you put yourself out there today, if you're creating anything, if you're making commentary on anything, you are increasingly on the razor's edge. You really do end up walking a line, you know?
I'm happy to walk that line. I have a tribe, you know, and they come to see me. Look, if I did something really bad, you know, if I drove in my car drunk or on drugs and I ran over a kid or I did a hit and run or, you know, something like that, yeah, I can understand I'd get cancelled. But because I say the things that I say, I know how to say them in such a way not to get cancelled. And even who, okay, this is the issue. The most of the people who complain about the Louis C.K.'s and all the other people that they got cancelled are not his people. They're other people. People get offended on behalf of other people. Italians don't get offended. It's the white people who get offended on our behalf.
That's true.
You know, our podcast was mocked on Comedy Central.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
We were mocked, and we didn't turn it into. I mean, I flipped out because my thing was justice.
Yeah.
If you're going to go berserk over everybody else, you should go berserk over us. But then, John, I think there was a consensus here. Like, you know, they made the jokes, and they were Italian themed jokes.
Yeah.
And they were mocking. And I think had it happened to any other group in this country,
they
would have been destroyed. But we're the last ethnic group in America could still kick around, and nobody's here to blow the whistle on.
Yeah.
You know what my mother said when I explained to her that situation? She's like, I don't know what everybody's complaining about. Everybody knows Italians have a na faccia di puttana vecchia. You can insult them.
Yeah, we take it.
I love it. Na faccia di una puttana vecchia. Yeah. What's the difference between una puttana vecchia and a puttana nuova?
Oh, there's a lot of difference.
Yeah?
That's all. Yeah, sure. There was a lot of sayings because puttana vecchia is like, that's like the last ramp off because it's not good for business. Puttana Nova's got business. Puttana Vecchia, the well's running dry.
I love it. I love these things. Where do they come from, you know?
Great question.
Because it's our people.
Yeah.
But it's the same energy that you put into writing a new show, right?
Yeah.
Our regional languages are so blessed with that creativity.
And it's not just that, it's the traditions, like, and the potions that they use, the things that they do. Like, I remember once I came home and was a little bit drunk or whatever, and one of my aunties goes, oh, you know what you do to stop you being drunk? You got to put your head to the side, and we squeeze lemon juice into your ear. I'm thinking, because, you know, like, if you've got conjunctivitis, what they do, they boil onions, and they put a boiled, and, you know, you cool it down, and they put it on your eye, and it heals conjunctivitis. Okay, that's an old wives' tale, whatever. That's how they fix the conjunctivitis. But what I want to know is, who was the first Gumari to think of putting lemon juice in someone's ear? That's where I was. Who was the first? Like,
it was probably 3,000 years ago. That's the beauty of us. Spartacus was running around, and somebody, this Venutian god, to do this thing.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of who we are. All our dysfunctions are thousands of years old.
I'll never forget, Pat, when you took me to Joey Vitale's house, and Ralph goes, his father. When I was little, I had problems with my ear, so my mother would send me down the street to the lady who was lactating, and she would squirt breast milk into my ear.
That is true.
Yeah, it's true.
But it worked. They're Byzantines of ours, Joe. They worked. All their ear infections went away. There's something to that breast milk because they all got the squirt in the ear and they were all healed. So there's something to be
said. Whose idea was that, though? How do you come up with the,
We've got thousands of years with no medicine to figure this stuff out. I mean, that's what I keep saying. We were in the same place. We're only outside of Italy 100 years at most. Yeah. We were in the same place. Yeah. Moses was in grammar school. We were there.
My favorite solution was I had a friend from the old neighborhood, friend of my dad's who I was doing work with, and he was on a really, really bad luck streak. He was divorced, he's having trouble with his finances. We were working in a little office, and in the middle of the day, everybody's on the computer working. All of a sudden, the shelf above his head collapses, and a lamp splits his head open. I mean, it was just, the guy had a run of horrible luck. So I said to him, you know, maybe you got malocchio. We might as well get diagnosed. Yeah. So I called this old lady, and I think she took a T-shirt or whatever, and she diagnosed him. And she was responding the sort of prescription in broken English. And so she said to him, you know, I want you to take a lemon and salt, and I want you to rub yourself with it and scrub this, and then put it here and then burn it and then bury the burnt ashes in your backyard.
Yeah.
So he came in a couple of days later. I said, you know, how you feeling? He goes, actually, I feel pretty good. He goes, but I was a little embarrassed. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, I live in Yonkers. A couple of my neighbors saw me taking off my clothes. I'm like, she never told you to do this ceremony in your yard. She told you to bury it in your yard. You know, you didn't have to. You could have done this in the bathtub or the shower and then just burned it and buried it outside. But he never thought of it. So he said in his yard, taking the malocchio off with lemons and all this stuff. And
it's interesting, the malocchio thing. I talk about it in the show because I talk about it how it's easy being non-Italian. Because being Italian, you've got all these complicated things. Like, you know, you've got to worry about things that you don't see. Like, so in Australia, the Australians, we call them the Aussies, right? The Aussies, well, you call them Americani, right? I'm sort of.
Yeah, Americani, yeah.
So an Americano kid can go and play outside in the freezing cold or in a windy condition and nothing will happen. But an Italian will get no botti vento, no corpo di aria. If we go out in the same conditions, we could get paralyzed from the neck down.
Yes, correct. Of course.
And here's the funny thing about the malocchio, because I had this Aussie, non-Italian, he said, what happens when you get the evil eye, the malocchio? I said, oh, it's bad. I said, you get like a fever, you start shivering, a runny nose, a sore throat. I said, basically, you get COVID, right?
That's very true, yeah.
And I thought about it. For the last 2 years, the whole world has had malocchio.
The malocchio.
You ain't kidding. There's a lot of profound thinking to be done about that statement.
I reckon we should get all these nonnas to all these nonnas to have the piatto with the oil and the water and blessing the whole world to get rid of the malocchio. Before monkeypox comes.
Yeah, but this is the question I have.
Yeah.
And we're there, ha ha, he he, we're all laughing. But, you know, you guys are young fathers. Are you going to be the one screaming, if you don't cover your head, you're going to die of pneumonia? Are you going to do to them what our grandparents did to us? Is it so bred in you that, like my mother, I see stuff now that my mother says, and I'm like, you know, my mother was always obsessed with kids that have sandals with no socks are going to die in pneumonia. Yeah. It could be 8,000 degrees out. Yeah. Somehow feet and colder, like a prescription for that. And now I'm getting older. I'm saying that kid has no, it's starting to come out in me. Do you see that in yourself?
A little bit, but then I, you know, I'm actually a scientist by profession. So I went to university for 4 years to study science. So I'm more of a science brain. I go, but does this make sense? You know, don't go in the water without shoes, you know, without sock. Why? You know, you know, botti vent. There's actually a great article. I'll send it to you guys. There was an English journalist who had to live in Italy for 2 or 3 years. And he wrote a story and he said, Italians get sicknesses and diseases that no one else gets.
That's so true.
You know, he goes, all these things I've never heard of. They've got to walk around with a scarf because, you know, no corpo di aria, no botti vento. You know, they've got things to worry about that we never had. And I read that article and I wrote this routine about it. And it's that, you know, like, what about this? This is my favorite. You're not allowed to go swimming for 2 hours after you've eaten. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to get a cramp and you're going to drown. No, the real reason they don't want you to go swimming after lunch is because they want to see bello tranquillo so un vivo no caffè.
Very true.
That's why they don't want the kid. Because otherwise, if the kids go in the water, they got to look after them and they can't relax and have their bello caffè. That's the real reason. Why?
That's true.
Because the mangi, the Americani, Aussies, the mangi cakes, they can go in the swimming after the lunch.
I always was aware of that, and I always felt that there was some kind of scheme going on because they were still feeding us. So we would eat, you'd digest for 40 minutes, and then the watermelon came out and the rest of the fruit. And like, so you're at the whole day at the beach. You can't go in the water. You're just sitting there, you know?
I had a cousin who would just eat so much at the beach, like parmigiana, then a sandwich, then the watermelon, then the crema di caffè, that the mother would be like, tomorrow morning, you can't even wash your face. Like, forget about going to the
You know, it's funny that Joe brings up the idea that Italians get diseases that others don't get, because I was in Calabria. It was my first trip to Calabria, actually, and I was doing it with NIAF, and we were staying in Reggio Calabria, and it was like July, so it was 90 degrees every day. I'm in a suit every day.
Yeah.
And so I got back to this nice hotel, and I said to the manager, I said, listen, my air conditioning is not working. Would you send somebody to fix it? And he's like, oh, senora, you know, we will, but you probably don't want to put it on because you'll get sick. And then I said, no, you know, I'm American. I have air conditioning blasting wherever I go.
Yeah.
Sure enough, I slept the first night with air conditioning on. I felt cool. I felt great. I slept well. I got the worst chest infection. It was like the Black Death. I had like the plague. And I'm like, did they put some kind of virus in the air conditioning to prove themselves? I mean, it was like written, you know, in a script. But yeah, I got so sick.
Nah, you know why? Because they never used the air conditioning, that all the germs built up in there. And then when they turned it on, it got into you.
That was my theory.
That's it. Because I went to Calabria a couple of years ago before COVID, and it was 40 something degrees. And they're looking at the air conditioning, wondering at what hour they're going to put it on. Now, let's wait till it gets to 50 degrees.
It's like 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
No, it's Celsius. Why don't we wait to Nakum Party? Spettiamo fino a quando arriva 50, and then we'll put it on. Don't put it on before, because we're going to waste money. You know, and you don't get sick from the air. When you get the flu, it's a virus.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with the speed of the air or the cold of it.
Yeah.
It's a virus.
Yeah, but you're destroying their that's their thing. They don't want that trampled on. I would come home from Catholic school in the 80s, right? And I come home for lunch. And my grandmother was constantly yelling that I was eating too fast because I'd get back to school and I was going to die of indigestion, die of indigestion. And one day I turned to her, I said, who do you know that ever died of indigestion?
Yeah.
And she was outraged because I called the bluff.
Yeah.
But it was like, how dare I question? Like, you don't have any, I don't know. Maybe there was a common understanding that it was all BS, but it just couldn't be. It was just, I didn't have the right to make that call.
Yeah, that's so funny.
But this is what unites us. This is like John and I have an experience. He was in Sicily with NIAF. And my brother and I were going, and we were supposed to have a meeting with Renzi. He was going to have a meeting with Renzi. It was a big deal. But my brother's very cheap. My brother's got his confirmation money underneath the bed on a rubber band. But my brother decides we're going to take a plane from New York to Toronto and then to Rome because he saved like $55 on this.
Yeah.
And we never had to do a stopover, but my suitcases got lost. So I'm in Italy with no underwear, no suitcases, no clothes, and no suit to go meet Renzi with John, right? So I'm screaming at my brother like bloody murder. He's calling my mother up crying and adult man, why is he yelling at me like this? My mother's calling me on my cell phone. Don't talk to your brother like this. You're going to make him nervous. My mother, well, besides the fact that my mother called the Canadian embassy in the United States, you know, the hotline, they have a number if somebody dies, foreign national.
Yeah.
My mother hit that button because she knew somebody would answer. She goes, can you help my kids get their suitcases out of the airport in Toronto?
Sure.
I called the airport in Toronto. I call security and I hear a guy's name, Antonio. And of all the manja cake Canadians I had to deal with, he was the only guy who had sympathy for me. And I had that moment. He's Italian. He gets me.
Yeah.
And we became friends. And I'm talking. I'm calling him. He's trying to get my bag out. He goes to me. He goes, I'm trying my best. He goes, my boss thinks we have to be related because why else would I be working so hard for you? that's the bond. That's the bond that you guys heralded. That if the Italians in the Anglophonic world, there's something, if it's dysfunction, if it's common blood, there's something that binds us together that we get each other.
Yeah.
Well, then the Anglo guy next door.
Yeah. And that's what humor does. See, laughing is the shortest distance between two people. So when two strangers laugh, when you meet someone at a bus stop or in the train station, and all of a sudden you laugh about the same thing, all of a sudden it instantaneously breaks down the barrier and makes that stranger a friend because you're laughing at the same thing. And that's why, you know, coming to see these shows is a great thing because if nothing else, if you have nothing else in common with the person next to you who's a stranger, we all have one thing in common. We all have exactly the same sense of humor. And that's why we're in that room because we are laughing at this person. We come to see Joe because we know that Joe is going to say the things that we all relate to. And it's a very strong humor breaks down barriers and creates connections simultaneously, instantly. And it's a great thing. It's a great thing to be able to laugh at ourselves.
Well, if there's anybody out there who could make us laugh at ourselves, it's the Italian Seinfeld, Joe Avati. And we're 45 minutes into this conversation at this point, and it was supposed to be an hour because Joe had to go on stage in Toronto not long after this interview. But we were having such a good time. We were getting so deep, I think deeper than any of us really expected. And we ended up having 2 hours of conversation. Joe was so gracious and stayed with us. So we decided to split this episode into two and come back next week with the second half as we go really even deeper into not just humor and comedy and the quirks of who we are, but the why we are and where we're going and what the future holds for our community. So it's one that I hope everybody's going to return for, and it's really been an incredible conversation. I think we all left floating on how much Italian pride and enjoyment we shared in the time together. So we hope you guys enjoyed the first half of this awesome conversation we had with Joe Avati. If you are interested in catching him on his U.S. tour, this episode is going to be released on Wednesday, the 22nd of June, and tonight Joe's going to be in New Jersey at the Bottega restaurant. Tomorrow he's going to be in New York at Adelphi University on Long Island. And then on July 16th, he'll be playing in Los Angeles at the Grand Annex Music Hall, two shows. And on July 17th, in San Jose at the Improv Comedy Club. So you can get tickets online at joeavati.com. I highly recommend everybody come out. Pat, Roe, and I and a lot of our friends are going to be at the show tomorrow night in Long Island. And if you're at the show, come out and give us a holler. We'd love to meet you. And make sure to come back next week for part two of our conversation with the Italian Seinfeld, Joe Avati. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Da, 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 da. See da, 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 da.